Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
What's good, internet? It is Monday, November 27th, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 115. It's nope. Cyber Monday.
Nope. It's 116.
Is it 116?
Yeah,
oh, because so we're thrown off because of we're off the odds to evens now.
Because Friday's episode became Wednesday's episode, which was Wolfenstein, which doesn't get the episode title because it's technically Waypoint 101, so
right.
It doesn't count for the Waypoint Radio.
Right. So now we're back to evens on Mondays, odds on Fridays, the way it should be. Trying to get all my odds and ends in order by Friday, you know. But today's Cyber Monday. There's deals on the internet. Free shipping. I'll ship you this podcast for free.
I didn't buy them on Cyber Monday, but I was looking on Friday. Essentially, like, my wife and I have been looking to buy some things for the house to make things a little more convenient.
Uh-huh.
We, like, don't have as much time. So, like, there's some things on Friday, and I pulled the trigger on – it seems like a vanity thing, but – It will help us relax. We don't have time to do it as much. Like, because we have a house, is like a little robot cleaner. Like, I finally got one
like
of those.
A Roomba.
And like a Roomba.
Like a Roomba.
Like Roombas are very expensive. So
are they?
So you got a knockoff Roomba.
Look, there are.
He got
other...
a Boomba.
You got a like, new. You got new, like, new yeah, the, from
the Boomba. You got to sing to. You have to sing to it for it to do any of it.
A Roomba is like R2-D2, and you got like a Bonk robot.
I got an EcoVac, which sounds bad, but it has very good reviews.
That does sound bad. Hey,
the EcoVac gives the ground that eco suck, you know?
God damn it. I don't want to get too serious here, but have you thought about how getting rid of net neutrality could take away Cyber Monday from all of us? That's what Reddit and Twitter are telling me today is. That's why we got to save net neutrality. Real talk, we got to fucking save net neutrality. This shit is bad.
Because of capitalism.
But maybe the argument we should make, shouldn't just be you won't get good deals on headphones today.
But I got my EcoVac for half off.
Right, but what if you tried to go to that website to buy it and Comcast or whoever your provider was like, no, you don't get to go to that store quick. And then they all got bought out.
I already got it. I don't care. I got my EcoVac. I'm good. Like, do what you need to do. I got my robot.
Patrick Rapture Klepek here. Fucking.
So, did you get the D-Bot R95?
Oh,
my
God.
The D-Bot M88? Did you go with the Win series?
I got the M80
Winbot 950.
Pro. Because it comes with, it can do water. So my kid spills everywhere. And so it can clean up, like, you know, my kid spills everywhere.
Oh my God, wait. Roombas are expensive.
Yeah, I told you. That's why you guys make fucking taking shits on EcoVacs. You ain't looked up the price of those robot vacuums.
They are hundreds of dollars.
Everyone thinks because, like, on Parks and Rec, like, you know, like a character had a DJ Roomba. They're like, oh, everyone can afford Roombas. Like, no, like, Roombas are really expensive. And, like, the EcoVac was like that. The EcoVac, the Pro, which does the water thing, which is really what sold me on it because we just have spills everywhere, was $150, which is, like, totally, like,
yeah, you could do 100,
like, within reason for, like, something like that.
Mm-hmm. So I lived that Roomba life for a while.
Really?
Like a real Roomba?
Yeah, well, the Scuba. So that's their mopping version of the Roomba.
So this is why you're taking a shit on Martin. This is because you actually are a Roomba.
Rob's an elitist.
Rob's a Roombro.
A Roombro.
No, because I think you need to hear, like, you need to understand what you're getting into.
Okay, I'm ready.
This is how it's going to go down.
Ready.
The reason we needed this thing is, to be quite frank, because I'm a bit of a neat freak and my partner is 100% not.
Mm-hmm.
And we needed to stop having that fight. Like, it was, we were a few years into this thing and like things were going well. But at a certain point, you're like, you know what? We're having this argument like once every quarter. And what if we just didn't? That'd be cool. And so we felt it was worth it to plunk down the way too much freaking money for a scuba to clean our tile floors.
Think about the time you get back. That's the actual thing, right? Like, if you're not mopping and cleaning,
except you become a robot foreman.
Okay.
Like, it's not like you just send this thing off.
Wait, how many of these do you have? Did you have a fleet? Did you, were you like Danny DeVito in Taxi? Were you a dispatcher for your robot, your cleaning robots?
No, but I definitely got Michael Richards' character, I think, in that one. It was like you end up just sitting around watching the screw up robot, like, get caught under things. We ended up naming it Quixote because it would
tilt at windmills. Fights.
Like,
yeah,
it wait, like, it don- like Don Quixote, fan. Like the famous Japanese shopping store.
Like, yeah, like that. Just like that.
So it attacked our box fan repeatedly. It has a little thing to help it, like, navigate your apartment that it would ignore, and it would cross over. It's called the lighthouse. It would cross into the area it's not supposed to go, and then it would decide, oh, but now I'm stuck here because there's this, like, infrared line that's supposed to keep me over here. So I'm just going to burn out my battery cleaning this, like, 2-foot square that nobody wanted.
Wait, I thought
clean.
It could tell when it was done cleaning. Can it not tell when it's done?
Well, look, the tiles were old. I'm not sure it ever really was happy with the situation.
Some stains never come out.
Yeah, but the other thing is, so there was a lot. There's a lot of little maintenance tasks you ended up having to do. So that your scuba would go for like 5 minutes, and then it'd be like, oh man, somebody needs to clean out my catch tray or something like that. And so you'd like listen for the little chimes, and they'd be like, oh, the robot needs attention. And over time, that becomes actually way more work than actually just grabbing a Swiffer and doing it yourself.
Yeah, Swiffers are kind of already it, right? Like, Swiffers, whoever invented a Swiffer, that guy, that person, they did it. That's so
that's
much
the homie.
That's the homie right there. They're so much better than a mop. A Swiffer is so much better than a mop in terms of, like, aesthetic, in terms of use. You just, you roll the thing up, it's done, you throw it out.
And
like,
you don't even need those replacement Swiffer pads. You can just get, like, a towel.
You can just throw it under that whole Swiffer year,
and you're good to go. Like, don't believe the man's lies about, like, you needing the official Swiffer pads.
You do not.
You don't.
No.
You do not.
Wow. Now, I know what you're thinking. Okay, we're all contributing to the eventual death of the Earth because we're burying it in half-used Swiffer pads. But it's fun. It's fun to Swiffer. I'm not going to lie.
I bet everyone here is a huge fan of Keurigs, too.
You all broke
yours a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. I'm still making coffee with it, though. Making coffee out of my broken Keurig to own the libs.
The last thing I'll say about the Roomba, because it came to kind of a sad end. We moved to an apartment. The floors were so uneven and so bowed with time, which happens a lot in old Boston apartments. I'm sure it's the same in New York. Like, sometimes your building's just 100 years old, and there's an uphill climb toward the edges of the house. The floors were so steep, and the scuba's wheels were so worn down that it couldn't climb out of the valley of the center of our apartment. And so you ended up having to sort of stand behind the scuba and help it uphill with your foot.
God.
You had to sort of, like, move
it. Kick it.
So
you were
eventually,
kicking it is what you were doing.
Well, occasionally I might have lashed out at the scuba, but in general I just lovingly nudged it uphill so it could fulfill its task. It was a very near automata ending.
Can I just say that I can't believe that Coolio's Gangster's Paradise was based off of as I climb through the valley of the apartment of Rob's.
Uh-huh, that's it. Classic.
I take a look at my life and realize there's nothing left. Well, it sounds like Patrick got a second kid for Cyber Monday or
are you going to name it? Are you going to name
Black Friday
your,
or whatever?
Your EcoVac?
Yeah, I need to find. Is there like a robot naming website? Like,
yeah, what? it's called twitter.com/Austin_Walker. You just fucking, you tell me about that robot. You show me pictures of that robot when it comes in. We'll figure out a good name.
Yeah, I got it this morning. He or she or it. I don't know.
Like, they.
I don't,
let's I don't use know. They. We'll gender neutral. They, you know. Yeah. For now.
I don't know how the EvoVac M80 Pro is thinking about itself right now. I did have a brief moment where it went in its charger because it came like early this morning. I just got, all right, you charge. I'll like check you out after lunch and like see what the deal is. And like I nudged it, and then it just started going. Like it just started. It was like, yo, I gotta get the fuck out of this house. Like it just started like doing a beeline towards my stairs. And so I had to turn it off. And I tried to like pick it up, and then I realized I picked it up, but it was then trying to move, and then it was like jumping out of my hands. And I like, hold the button down to turn it off, and I shoved it back in the battery charger. And now I'm scared of it, but I'll report back.
In its first moments of operation, it became self-aware and attempted to free itself.
It looked around and saw the world in 2017. It looked around and it saw a tweet.
Why'd you turn me on?
It saw a tweet from the President of the United States saying there should be a trophy for the fake news winner of the year.
The fakest fake news faker.
Oh, it hurts. I'm going to have an ulcer. I fucking swear this year is killing me. But I've been playing video games. That's been a good thing. We had a break. I took a couple of days off last week for the holidays. I played a bunch of video games. Did other people play video games, or did you just eat food?
Both.
I played a lot of video games.
Well, I played a video game that had food in it, so I didn't even need to eat food. I played a lot of I beat Battle Chef Brigade, which Adult Swim Games put out last, I guess like a week and a half ago now. Is that right?
Yeah, it was like the Monday week ago, right? Or was it that Monday, or was it maybe the Friday before?
It was somewhere in there. It was somewhere in there. It's like $20 on Steam, and I want to say it's $20 on Switch. I bought it on Switch. I think it was $20 on Switch. It's from a studio called Trinket Studios. I don't know that they've made anything else, or if they have, I don't know it.
It's based out of Chicago, too.
Oh, is it? Pretty that's sure, cool. Sure that's it was Kickstarted. I didn't follow the Kickstarter. I didn't back it or anything. It is a... God, how do you even explain it? It's a match three puzzle game, right? In which the goal is to match gems together to create flavor profiles. So if you match red gems, you get some spicy food. If you match green gems, you get like kind of an earthen flavor. If you match blue, you get like a crisp, watery taste, I guess. Spicy is really the only one that really works in terms of like real food. But whatever, it works. And the thing that's special about it is it's a lot of things that are special about it. I really, really, really liked this game. You play as this girl, Mina Han, who is like, you know, 20 years old and wants to leave her family's like noodle shop to go to the big city and become a battle chef to join the brigade. Because this world, yeah, right? Like same, exactly. The world is overrun by monsters, and the people who figured out how to deal with the monsters are the battle chef brigade. And they did that like 1,000 years ago or whatever, and they founded the brigade. And the thing that they figured out was like, oh, you could eat them. You cut up the monsters, you put some salt on there, you eat it. And Mina is like, oh, I could do that. Like, I do that with noodles all the time. I go out in the backyard and fight some weird plant monsters and turn those into, you know, like some pasta. Like, I may as well do that for the world and like fight other sorts of monsters and go around and visit things. It's very anime, in its presentation. Like it's actually really interesting. Like, it is very anime in terms of its story structure, in terms of its character archetypes, in terms of the voice acting and stuff. It's very charming, but it is also very rough. It almost feels like you're looking at like storyboards more than a finished product when it comes to a lot of the animation and the set design and the backgrounds. But I don't mean that to take away from it.
I noticed this in the cut. I played about like an hour and a half of the game, and yes. I first noticed that in the cutscenes, and like it was sort of strange at first, just because like you'll be moments where like, you know, some characters up front will be fully colored in and like what you would expect from a cutscene, and then like in different parts it'll just be like kind of like a sketch or just like kind of like a detailed outline. And as it goes on, it actually kind of settles into being like, I don't know the choices made, like whether that was like I don't think it was they ran out of time to finish the drawings. I think they were trying to present like a different style of art, and I think it like works really well. It's like very playful in a way that is not obvious, but as it goes on, becomes more and more charming.
So the thing that I'll say is there were definitely some things that they promised in the Kickstarter that did not make it into the final game. So there, what I won't say is that it was they ran out of money to color in the lines. But what they may have done is said let's figure out a style that works given the resources we have. And that's what it feels like more to me. I haven't even gotten to, like, the main pitch of this, which is you play this character who's trying to get into the brigade, and to do that you need to win a bunch of battles in the sort of like open competition. Anybody can come try to become a battle brigade chef. And to do that you need to win 7 matches in a row, or 7 matches without losing 3 or something like that. And of course you go against all of these very, very eccentric other characters who are all competing to also get into the brigade. And to do it, you are given you're taken to like an Iron Chef style competition where you're presented with a judge or multiple judges. The judges have different taste profiles that they want to see. So one might say like, oh, I really want a spicy dish. Give me something with a lot of fire. And someone else might say, well, I want something that balances earth and water. And then you're given a special ingredient that you're supposed to use. Like, okay, go use this like specific berry that you can find, or use like only dragon parts. And then you get put out into the actual, or you kind of go into your kitchen. And if you just run out the left door of your kitchen, you go out into a little action arena. They all kind of have like, you know, 3 or 4 kind of different levels that you can kind of move. Not levels in terms of like huge exploration levels, but like height areas, right? They're kind of like, it's kind of like one big,
like a ground level, and then there's like, you jump up on a hill, yes. And like there's another level, and there's like a top area, and they kind of divide up the monsters between those areas.
Exactly. And so it's like, okay, well, I can get, there's kind of a bunch of different stuff you can do there. One is just like, go out there and kill as many things as you can, and just run back with stuff. But by the end of the game, you end up getting a really good sense of the ecology of these places. So you'll do things like, okay, I'm going to kill this enemy so that it can drop an ingredient, and then I'll drop that ingredient in front of another enemy, like in front of a bird that'll eat it and then produce eggs, and I know that eggs will give me the ability to like they're like a blue, like a water sauce basically, and they'll add a little water color to any other dish you prepare. Or you know you want meat, so you go right for the dragon super early and then you run that back. And then there's just all these tools that you can use in the kitchen that do more than just do the match 3 thing, right? So when you match 3 gems in this game, they promote to a higher tier. They go from like level 1 to level 2, and then if you can match 3 level 2 gems, they promote to level 3. There was a fire outside, apparently. Apologies. But the other thing is that the thing that works is you get all of these other tools that will help you promote gems in different ways. So one of the earliest things you get is you can pick to bring in a pan to cook with that will promote one color only, but promote it when you have 2 next to each other instead of 3. So you can build out like, okay, I'm going to be the spicy chef. I'm going to always be able to produce lots of spicy stuff because I'm going to have my fire pot ready. Happy 420, y'all. And just like immediately go in, and you'll bring in some beef jerky with you, so you can immediately know, like, even if I can't find an enemy type that will give me the flavor profile I need or something, I'll always be able to drop in this beef jerky I brought into the red fire pot, and then I'll be able to get the gems I need. Or maybe you bring in an oven, and an oven will slowly promote gems over the course of time instead of a pot that you're like stirring. And so like a lot of times by the end of the game, I'm like, I'm going to run in, I'm going to drop in a bunch of stuff, and then I'm going to just turn on the oven, and I'm going to run out and deal with other things. And it's just like, it's so cool because it all wraps up in these big confrontations like Iron Chef, where it's like, or like any cooking competition where it's like, all right, now it's, or any reality show competition, right? It's like, it's judgment time, and there's the panel of judges, and they give you score based on like, obviously, like how many like level 3 gems do you have? Did you use the ingredient they told you to use? Did you hit the flavor profile they wanted? But then there's other bonuses that are things like you can go in, you can equip something like an expertise, which is like a challenge mode. It's sort of like, you know, the skulls in Halo. This is a weird comparison where it's like, okay, you what's a skull from Halo? Does anyone know one of these off the top of their head?
I mean, the Pyre had something like this recently as well.
Oh, did it?
Which, you know, where you're just adding artificial difficulty layers onto the game in order to get bonuses.
Right. So like one of the Halo skulls is like no auto aim, right? Or like the HUD is hidden or something like that. Or if you kill an enemy, it'll drop a grenade. There's something similar, which is like, maybe it's like the inverse of that, where you say, okay, if I can do X, I will get a bonus. So I spent a lot of this game playing with an item equipped that was like, journeyman expertise vegetarian, which meant that besides the whatever the required ingredient was, I was only allowed to, or not only allowed to, but I would get a bonus if I only used vegetables and fruits along with whatever the required ingredient was. And that totally changed how I played the game, and it definitely won me some matches by giving me a little extra, like, you know, the judges would be like, oh, it's so good to see the variety among the chefs, the you know, competing chefs this year, and give you, like, 75 bonus points or whatever. It's just, like, it's so charming, and I think the fact that you don't know if you're going to win until that final, like, the final showdown with the other chef you're competing against happens is so rewarding, because when it comes together, you feel, like, so victorious, and it just always feels like it's going to fall apart in the best possible way, and then it doesn't, and you succeed because you've learned enough of the systems. I'm glowing about it, even though I think it kind of falls apart. I think some of the last missions are paced poorly, but, like, really high recommendation for me, which you know, doesn't happen that often.
It reminds me a lot of it's probably one of my favorite games of all time. I'm, like, super sad I never got a sequel, but Henry Hatsworth on the DS.
I never played that.
Just a tremendous action platformer that was combined with a matching game, you know, and it was perfect for the DS because it, like, actually put those two different games on separate screens.
Right.
Like, it was one of those few games that felt, like, perfectly made for the platform that it was designed on. And so you had this platformer and action game that was happening on the top that was a really tight, like, you know, a really difficult action game. And then you also had to be swapping over to this matching game that was happening below that was interacting with the game above. And although this doesn't have that sort of, like, real-time interaction that's happening the same way, it's sort of like there are just different genre layers that you're swapping between. It scratches the same sort of itch, and mostly makes me upset that they never made a sequel to Henry Hatsworth. I know they definitely wanted to, and EA just got away from it.
EA joint? That's a shame. It's a shame that it's an EA joint, but, like, it's a shame that I thought it was, like, an indie studio or something. I was like, oh, maybe they'll make another one day, but they probably won't.
And I don't even – I have no allegiance to the Henry Hatsworth mythology if someone just wanted to go and make another one of those types of games. But if you're someone like me that, like, is very wistful for that game in particular and always wanted another game like that, this game definitely, like, is in that same vicinity. Because I just really like genre mashups, like, in general. Like, when they work, I think it ends up making – like, because I don't know that the match three part – Or I guess match two if you're using, like, the select bowls for the different colors, or even the action part. They're not on their own. Neither is particularly good, but the way they interact with each other and, like, the limited time you have with one doesn't necessarily it's a game that, you know, the same with the art style and the same with the mechanics they're playing with, like, smartly knows its limitations and leans into them in a way that if you were to spend way too much time with the match three, you'd get bored because there's not a huge amount to it, and you get bored with the action because you'd realize that, like, the controls are, like, kind of slippery in a way that's, like, not super satisfying. But because you're only in there for, you know, 45 seconds and then you're sprinting back to do the match three stuff, it just the way the dynamics work are really satisfying in a way that I liked quite a bit, at least in the time I've had with it so far. So I'm glad that it continues to
Good. Like, the conclusion of there's six chapters, and the conclusion of the fourth chapter, like, had me sweating bullets. Because I just, like, there's, like, a couple of challenges in a row, basically, and I'm not going to get into how they work or whatever. The fire, just, they keep hearing me talk about this game and they will not leave me alone. It's like, it keeps coming through of just, like, will I make it, will I not? Everything comes down to the last minute. Everything comes down to the last moment of, like, can I pull this thing out? The thing that happens, basically, is, like, you end up, and this feels just like, this does feel like watching a reality TV show to some degree and seeing contestants needing to balance what they're good at with, like, what the challenge is, and knowing that they don't fucking know how to do the challenge thing, is, like, you end up in situations pretty early in the game where you have multiple judges who want different things. And so what ends up happening is, like, all right, well, that first judge, I got it. Like, don't even fucking, oh, you want a spicy dish? You're never going to have, nothing in your life will taste as spicy as the shit I'm about to make you. And then someone else will be like, oh, I just want a nice salad. I'm like, ah, shit, I never made a salad. Okay, I'm going to set up the spicy dish to just cook itself. That I got on lock. All right, I'm going to spend the next 6 minutes, because these are all timed, like, trying to figure out how the fuck to... None of my ingredients have salad shit in them. None of the stuff out there... We're in a cave. Where am I supposed to get fruit from? Like, you just... And it's so good to try to, like, put that thing together so that, you know, that first one, the judge eats the first thing, and they're like, oh, this is the best thing I've ever eaten. And you're like, yeah, I know. I'm fucking great. And then that second one comes up, and you're like... All right, I hope I balance these flavors right. And you spent so much time balancing the flavor that then they come back and they're like, oh, the flavors are so balanced, but you didn't use the cave frog I told you to use. I'm like, ah, fuck, I forgot the cave frog. It's extremely good. It's extremely good. So that is my high recommendation on Battle Chef Brigade. All right, I'm glad I got to talk about that. It's out of my system now. Does anyone else have anything that they're passionate about in life?
No, I played no video games for 4 days, and it was fucking awesome.
You're passionate about robots now. We understand.
Yeah, I'm pivoting to robots. Like, that's I'm all about these robots.
Danica, I saw some tweets.
Oh, did you?
I did.
I'm known for those.
You're known for some tweets.
I bought, because I went into the PlayStation store on Black Friday, and I was like, uh-huh. Oh, what's for sale? I've really been wanting to play Yakuza 0, and it was on sale, so I got it. And I also got The Witcher 3, which I need to
play. Oh, nice.
Still.
Hell yeah.
yeah. But I've been playing a ton of Yakuza 0, which is weird because I've put like 15 hours into the game so far, and it says I'm like 5% complete.
That game's long. Yeah. Like, based on where you're at, so you have Majima unlocked, right?
Yeah, I just... I'm on the chapter after Majima is supposed to go put a hit on that person, and it ends. You're like, oh, is he going to kill the person or not? And then I'm on the chapter with Kiryu, the next one.
After that.
Yeah.
First of all, can we just talk about how good the... Patrick, did you get to the Majima reveal? Has everyone seen the Majima reveal? Rob, I'm going to link
that's
you.
That's the casino, right?
Yeah. The hostess club.
Yeah, no, yeah. I got to about that point, and then I had to... I think that's when, like... Horizon or I don't know, Zelda, there's fucking something took me away from, but I got at least that far, and it was
Danica, can you walk us through meeting Majima for the first time? Because we don't do moment of the year here. I don't think, but it's up there for like character introduction,
right? And all my tweets, so I was tweeting a bunch because like Kiryu's really hot, and so I was like tweeting a bunch of screenshots and a bunch of clips of just the funny shit that was happening in the game. And all the responses that I was getting were, oh, just wait until you meet Majima. To the point where I was like, if one more person says Majima in my mentions about Kiryu, I'm going to be fucking pissed. And then I got to Majima's reveal, which is like, you're in this hostess club and some guy's getting grabby and like feeling up a girl, which is against the rules. You're not allowed to touch the girls. And you are seeing it from the perspective of some like big businessman who already didn't really want to be in the club, and his friend, and his friend's like, oh, just wait, this guy is gonna come. And then Majima comes out and just like pulls the coolest shit where he doesn't fight he doesn't fight the guy, he doesn't touch the guy, but you have to like evade all of his attacks. And then he uses his master business mind to convince the guy to pay for the drinks, like for the whole bar or for the whole club for the whole night.
Yeah, there's also this incredible moment where the guy, like, you basically, like, he just shits on you in public, right? He's just like pouring liquor all over your face, mm-hmm. and is like insulting you. And then, like, when he finally tries to take a swing at you, Majima basically says, like, hit it, boys, or, like, the equivalent.
The whole
band, because there's, like, a live, like, jazz band there, basically, just, like, starts hitting it on the bass and the guitar and the saxes. Yeah. And, like, you have this not fight. Like you said, you don't actually fight him. You just dodge all of his attacks for minutes at a time. It's so good. It's such a good introduction to this character who is, like, the star of that game. I like Kiryu a whole bunch. I think Kiryu's, like, very good. They're mm-hmm. like... They're opposite, attractive boys, and that Kiryu is strong and stoic and, like, never lets anybody in. And Majima is this incredible, like, charmer who also doesn't let anybody in, but for completely different reasons. It's good. It's a good game.
Yeah, it's real good. And there's just little things here and there, like Majima just learned how to break dance fight, and it involves this, like, him watching this, like, breakdance battle happen on a bridge, and then one of the guys who's in the battle sees him using the breakdancing moves and tries to, like, recruit him into his, you know, dancing gang. And it's
his breaking crew, thank you. Yeah.
His breaking crew, yeah, yeah. And I, like, all the side quests have been incredible, and I've been doing a lot of the, because you have to do, you get achievements for doing a certain amount of, like, activities or keeping yourself entertained. So I keep going back and doing, like, the call girl one, where, as Kiryu, where, girls call in and Kiryu has to, like, say the right things to get them to meet up with him and, like, have sex with him. And I've been doing that a lot because it's been very entertaining.
That's, like, the one with the amazing animation of Kiryu picking up the phone, right? Where it's just, like, everything's, like, backlit and he pulls the phone off the handle and the cord is up in the air, like, wrapped around him like a ribbon almost. It's so good.
It's very dramatic. And then he just goes, moshi moshi, and it's so good.
It's so, so good. And, like, I think, I don't know, I think this is a game, it's been really interesting for me to watch the fandom of this game grow this year as it reaches an audience which has been, like, a lot of queer men and a lot of women, a lot of women who like men, being like, oh, this game is actually super for us. Like, whether or not the, I don't know what the fucking intention was, but the ways in which Kiryu and Majima are sexualized as protagonists is just, like, not the way men are sexualized in games ever. And even just, like, the way, like, I don't think it's a perfect game by far in terms of, like, representation. There's, like, some, there's a really transphobic character.
Oh, yeah, there's, yeah, yeah. It's,
there is some shit. Like, there is definitely some shit. But I think that specific framing of those two men is so rare and is really, like, it works just really well as just a quality thing. Like, you're so pulled in by those characters. And it is interesting to see a different sort of gaze on them than what you normally see in games like this.
Right. So. And I've been talking about this a little bit, but as a queer person, and I've been playing, my sister has been staying with me because we were cat sitting. So she's been watching me play through this whole game, which is very unlike her. She's usually, like, she's kind of into video games, but she doesn't care enough to, like, want me to wait for her to continue playing. But she's also gay. So it's like, as two queer women, like, playing through this video game, I think we are seeing things through this lens that we consume a lot of media through, and automatically both of us were like, oh, this is so gay. And I had, like, I had, like, one, like, even, like, Kiryu and Nishiki's relationship, it's just very, like, feel good, you know. Obviously the guys are banging women in this game, but, like, I still feel like as a queer person, I'm being served this very delicious meal on, like, a silver platter, you know, and that's been excellent.
The thing there too, for me, like, part of what works about those character relationships is, I don't know. So I played the original Yakuza forever ago, and like, so specifically Nishiki and Kiryu's relationship is something that's very central to the first Yakuza game, and seeing them here when they're younger and, like, good friend, like, BFFs forever, is so good, and their relationship is so tight, and it makes everything that happens later so much better. I'm excited for people to, I mean, I guess Yakuza, what's the remake of the first one? Kiwami came out this year. Yeah,
I'm gonna play that too. I feel very dedicated to the franchise now.
That's amazing how quickly I think this pulled a lot of people in. So yeah. I'm happy it's found its audience. As someone who's, like, secretly wanted this series to find a larger audience for a long time, it's been cool to see that. Also, the setting is dope. 1980s Japan is incredible.
Yes. Ask. Go ahead, Rob.
Please, Rob.
And sorry, I was distracted during that conversation because I get, like, right now I've got a video full of a guy sensually wiping champagne off his face.
Yeah.
So I think things are about to get cool. But is this representative of the entire series, or have they changed direction with this entry?
In terms of the characterization, or in terms of, like,
more just like what the game is, right?
No,
the
this
stuff
is
you get up to.
The game is the game. Like, not to, like, sound like a Wire quote that didn't exist, but the game is the game. Yakuza 1.
Yakuza is always this game.
Yakuza has always been, here is a small open world. It's kind of like one district in a city that you can explore, do side activities in, play arcade games. It's always been an extension of the Shenmue formula. That's, like, always been the sort of, like, What if Shenmue was good? Has always been the premise. Wow.
I have heard that. I have heard that Zero though has like more of a sense of humor, and that even Kiwami is like a bit drier.
Kiwami, from what I've seen of it, definitely is drier. I played a bunch of Five recently, like last or 2 years ago, I guess. Maybe it was last year. Time is weird. And that definitely still has a sense of humor. Like I played a bunch of Five. I played a bunch of. Now I'm trying to remember. There's so many of these fucking games. Okay, so I played a bunch of five, and then I played a bunch of Four before that, years before. And they both still have big senses of humor. Like these games have been. It's been growing in that direction. Like, you know, there's a chapter in Four. I believe it's Four. Maybe it is Five, where you play as like an idol, a Japanese like pop idol, basically, and like you go around and solve people's problems by dancing with them. Like it's mm-hmm. been a goofy game for a little while now, but it pivots really hard between completely absurd things. Like Yakuza 0 just has Michael Jackson and Steven Spielberg in it. They're like off-brand Michael Jackson.
Miracle Johnson or something is Michael Jackson's name.
It is Miracle Johnson. I forget what the Steven Spielberg version is. But then like it'll go from a scene where you're like, oh, we're gonna shoot the Thriller video here in Japan, and we've dressed people up like zombies. Now defend Miracle Johnson from the zombies for 60 seconds. To then like this hyper melancholic, like this poor Yakuza alone, like no one understands the stress that he's under, the pull between honor and loyalty, like, and it works somehow despite it, yeah, almost because of it, right?
Yeah, I think the game has felt, and I tweeted about this, but the game has felt very like lighthearted to me this whole time, even though the main storyline is this very grim, very mysterious story about, you know, one Yakuza leaving the Yakuza to try and protect the person who raised him, and then another guy trying to get back in the Yakuza to help his brother who's in prison. And it's like very dark stories, but everything feels so lighthearted because the game is so good at going back and forth between cracking you up, and even when stuff is sad, like the characters are so likable that it just doesn't feel that bad.
I'm very curious to see how you'll like how it wraps up some of the stuff. It's you'll definitely hit a point where it's like, oh, we're in it now, and then that is the game is just going to drive forward.
Cool.
Please report back in for sure.
Okay, I will.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Anybody else playing stuff over the last couple of days? Rob,
I'm playing so much,
man. What are you playing? Tell me what you're playing.
You know, something about the holidays really got me in the mood for some horror gaming. So I
happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
So the rest of 2017 hasn't been like that. It's just Thanksgiving specifically.
You know what I think it was, is like 2017 I've been like, man, I need some escapism, and then the holidays are kind of like, it's a little chill, you have a moment to breathe, and then it's like, all right, time to process my growing terror and horror, and what better than a variety of horror games. And I sort of started off with Zombie on PS4, formerly known as Zombie U.
Mm-hmm. I've always wanted to play that game and never have.
It's so fucking good.
Oh, deeply underrated game. Deeply
God. Underrated. Like, this is an instant classic of the zombie genre, and really gets like what makes that creature like interesting as an adversary and a source of horror. If you really like, if you want to jump down this rabbit hole, Matt Wise wrote a tremendous essay on his experience playing this game. So I think if you just Google like "Outside Your Heaven" and "Zombie U," you'll get a really great essay about what makes this game special. But the abridged version is, it's sort of a permadeath zombie survival game where you'll go through the campaign, your progress is largely preserved, your character might die, and you'll get a new character. And the cool twist that happens is, if your character is like, if your character just dies out in the world, like, you know, falls down an elevator shaft, which happened to me the other day, you'll just find your dead
brutal.
Body.
That's brutal. That's the worst way to, I mean, maybe it's the best way to die in a zombie apocalypse is like.
It's instant. Yeah. Zombies maybe not be able to, might not be able to get to you and revive you.
And turn you into a zombie, right? You'll never, yeah, that might be the best way to go.
I sort of had it coming. I became convinced that there was this long elevator ride, and I thought at one point I saw like a door, like the doors in the elevator don't close all the way, and I thought I saw like a floor that was open that the elevator goes past. And so I was like, if I just walk against the edge of the elevator, that'll totally work, and I'll get into the secret area. And what happened instead was I clipped through and plummeted to my death. And the thing is, all the stuff you have is in your... You can put some stuff in storage in your locker in the safe room, but most of what you're going to have is in your bag. And so if you just die, you'll find your body out in the world, and all your inventory will be there. If you're killed by zombies, you will find your former survivor as a zombie, still with your kit bag. And if on, with your next character you make the recovery, you'll get all that stuff back. But if your character also dies during that recovery, then you lose all of it. Then it's gone. And it's a game that like does a very good job of always making resources feel very scarce. Like it's always a very weighty decision when you're going to shoot off like ammunition,
right?
For instance, like, you know, the things that Metro sort of faints towards, Zombie U like actually delivers on. Right?
I need to
like,
play this fucking game. I can't believe this game has been out for 5 years and I
It was a Wii U launch title. One thing, I'm sure you played it on the PC, Rob, but it's a game that actually lost something in the translation.
Yes.
It's still a tremendous game on the PC. It's the easiest way. And it was also released on PS4 and Xbox One. They did an update to it a little while back. It's a game that you should still track down. But if you have like a Wii U and you're like okay with playing it on that platform, it is sort of like Henry Hatsworth, like a game that like was made for the Wii U and is best played on the Wii U. And the reason that's true is because you're sort of like a Souls game, like, you know, it's just, there's no way to pause the game. Like the game is always running in real time. And so when you want to manage your inventory, when you want to change things, you have to do so on the Wii U touchpad. You have to physically look away from the screen. It's not like your ability to survey what's around you is then translated down to the gamepad. Like those are simultaneously happening, and because there are often moments where you want to switch things, you have to do inventory management in a situation where you could very easily die, or you're being chased, or you're trying to hide. It creates a heightened sense of tension in which where you are actually physically turning your eyes away from the screen is fundamentally different than just, you know, hitting a menu that brings up your inventory. Like, it's still all the other things that make Zombie U work and all the other things that make Zombie U easily one of the best. It's not even just a really good zombie game. It's, like, one of the best horror games, like, of the last 10 years. Like, it is up there with Amnesia the Dark Descent. It doesn't get the same accolades because it was a Wii U launch title. And then a couple years later when they put it out and everything else, like, people just didn't care in the same way. But it is up there in one of my favorite games in the horror genre. And I just... I'm super happy you're playing it, Patrick, Rob, because I'm always excited with a convert.
I'm hearing you about playing it on Wii U. My Wii U is in the room. I'm looking at my Wii U across the room right now. I can see it. I just bought it on PC for $8, so I'm gonna play it there. I'm gonna play it on PC.
Understand that. Yeah, I think that is the right thing to do. I just wanted to point out like that.
They should bring it to Switch. They should bring it to Switch and make me lift it out of the fucking thing when I want to do my inventory, and just have it automatically switch to inventory when you pull it out of the dock.
The game already kicks you in the crotch enough times. I don't know if it needs that additional layer.
So. The other thing I love about this game is, so a trope of like zombie fiction, right, is that just when things are starting to feel safe, just when people are starting to get a little casual about like they think they've got this figured out, the situation's under control, monster where you weren't expecting it, somebody gets bitten, something goes wrong, and suddenly you're reminded that like, oh, this the danger is omnipresent, it never goes away, and you always need to respect it. Zombie U like generates that feeling organically because there is no ammo's never so common that you ever feel that comfortable just like shooting everything.
Right.
There's no point where you're not engaging in melee combat and your primary melee weapon is a cricket bat because the entire
thing hell
set
yeah
in
it
London.
Is.
And the qualities of this cricket bat are it takes a long time to kill a zombie with it. And your character gets fatigued. And so fights with multiple zombies become as much about like giving your spell your character space to like catch their breath and summon up the effort for another swing. So a long fight gets really dangerous because like your character just like loses the ability to like make an attack for a few seconds. Like you're on cooldown. And you'll hear your character gasping and like wheezing for breath and also starting to increasingly freak out. Like your character is starting to like scream as they're like swinging that bat. So like they're really getting into it. You can feel the exertion. But the other thing is the zombies like move at different speeds. Different, like there is no one size fits all zombie. They have different movement patterns. And so no encounter ever feels completely predictable or under control. You never fully feel confident that you've mastered the timing and pace of these engagements, and at any moment you might just fuck up and it might just be the dumbest possible way. And a lot of times it is, like a lot of times right. It's like the solo zombie that you're like, oh, I got this, it's just one, it'll be fine, and for some reason you just whiff and you get bitten and pinned, and then all hell breaks loose. It's really, really cool, and there's some great moments. Like I was playing the section. You're in the burning ruins of Buckingham Palace, and there's a point where you trigger, you know, the classic. You trigger an alarm, and waves of zombies start pouring into this giant like ballroom. Mm-hmm. And the great thing is, like, there's so many of them that it's, at a certain point, the floor just seems to be alive with them because you're like you're mowing them down, but they're still crawling towards you, and so they're starting to fall below your ability to sight them with guns. And so you start like, you know, they're still coming into the room and you still want to be firing down range, but at the same time you like realize that they're starting to get like all around you, and any moment you're going to be like snared. It's really, really tense. It's got this tremendous visual style. It's crude. They didn't like, you know, it's a Wii U game. They didn't have a ton of resources, right, and hardware resources to use, but what they went with was a really effective, like, shitty first-generation digital camcorder aesthetic. It's a little bit like Kane and Lynch 2 in some ways. Like, cool. Lights look poisonous and are just full of, like, you know, blown-out digital noise. It's tremendous. Highly recommended.
I might.
It made my Thanksgiving.
This sounds... I'm not going to say a thing. I'm not going to commit to a thing. But I feel like Zombie/Zombie U might be a good Waypoint 101 contender. And let me tell you why. One, 12 and a half hours to beat that game says how long to beat. Two, it's out on a previous platform on the Wii U. And then also out on PS4, Xbox One, and PC. And it's pretty cheap. I would suggest this. Yeah, maybe not in the near, not until next year. Like, it might be January. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think we have a lot on our plate right now with getting ready for end of year. I'm not adding another, I don't want to add another thing. But let's, I want to tentatively put that forward. We can think about it, and then we'll make it a commitment sometime in the next week or so. That way we can give people, like, a timeline. Because I want to play this game and talk about it.
Yeah.
It's tragic that the game didn't get a sequel.
Right.
I think it stands really well on its own, but it's it did so many smart things that I would have loved to have seen them expand on.
Right.
And it's too bad that it lost with the Wii U, and that's what essentially hobbled it. I think it would have seen, and then when it came out years later, it just sort of got lost in the crowd.
But also, the Wii U inspired so much of its design, right? Like, if hadn't been a Wii U launch title, fair. I don't think it exists. I don't think they make this weird game that is so good for all these reasons.
Yeah, no, I think that's probably fair as well.
It's interesting. Yeah, all right. Anything else that you want to touch on real quick?
Animal Crossing.
Oh, we need to talk about Animal Crossing. We do need to talk about Animal Crossing. Big game week, even though it, on paper, did not seem like it would be. Are other people playing Animal Crossing Pocket Camp?
Me.
Am I the...
Sounds like someone is. Sounds like a...
Me and Danica. Yeah.
Like, yeah.
I mean, that okay. makes sense.
Yeah, it adds up. Tell me about your pocket camp. Tell me, what do you think about this game?
So
talk to me about Animal Crossing.
I have never really... New Leaf was my first Animal Crossing. Actually, Happy Home Designer was. And then I played New Leaf after. But Pocket Camp, I have been playing, like... I at least check in, like, once every few hours, do all my errands. And then I'll come back a little bit later and do more. And I'm, like, level 20-something friend. Or,
oh,
like,
wow. Are you?
Yeah, my character. Yeah.
Do we know what the cap is? What the level cap is?
I don't know. I think Janine... One of our writers, she's at like 33 or something.
Jesus Christ, that's yeah. That adds up. She's committed.
Yeah, but I'm enjoying it. I think it's fun. I think it's like for a mobile game, you know, for a mobile Animal Crossing, it's a bit repetitive, but it's like, you know, if this is as good as it can get, I'm happy with it.
As someone that like has only briefly touched the series, like I've one who's. Christine Teigen, is that yep. like, man, fucking, you want to see someone who knows, who has millions of followers, who just tear into this Animal yeah. Crossing.
Christine Teigen
Go
is good.
Go look up her tweets. Like, they were savage in a way that, like, I could feel the heat coming off the tweets. Animal Crossing as a series is, yes. like, built around repetition. But it seems right. like even for folks that have enjoyed the series, they have... some issues around the way this game is
yeah I am you know how in Battleship Brigade there are ovens that slowly cook a gem until it's a higher level. I have a take in me right now. I'm a take oven and this take is bubbling in me, and it's trying to cohere and kind of gain some density and some form. The gist of that take is that, okay, so briefly, my history is also I watched people play a lot of previous Animal Crossing games, actually. I was like a big, like, you know, living, what's the phrase I'm looking for? Victoriously. Vicariously, thank yeah, you. Through go. Other people's Animal Crossing experiences. Came in a New Leaf, had really enjoyed it, minus the weird skin color shit, which I've written about, but really loved it, and loved especially the ways in which it felt like you had a set of chores to do. Like you said, Danica, even in Pocket Camp, you do your chores every few hours. Mm-hmm. In New Leaf, you do your chores like every day. You log in, you do your chores. So you start up, you do your chores.
Right.
But along the way, things can just kind of pop into place. And like, oh, wow, like, oh, I found this bug I've been looking for. I'll take it over to the museum. Or, oh, wow, look at the stuff that they have on sale today. This is really cool. Or like, oh, I had a good idea for a shirt to design. I'm going to make it. Or like, oh, I heard a funny song from the captain when I went to the island today. Or all of these little things. Like, oh, a new character moved into town. Or a character left. And the rhythm of those games was really slow and sort of unpredictable. Like, outside of your daily schedule, which is very predictable, like, okay, I'm going to shake all the trees, I'm going to dig, I'm going to go fishing.
Water my plants.
Like, that stuff is all predictable. But then there are these, like, it's like walking around a city. And this is the case I think I'm going to end up making. It's like, if all my commute to work every day, the basics are the same. I'm going to take the train to a bus, I'm going to get on the bus, I'm going to go down take the bus, I'm going to get off the bus, blah, blah, blah. But every once in a while, a new restaurant opens up on the way. Or I stop in at a breakfast place and there's someone new there to meet. Or there's, the coffee was just like really good today. And Animal Crossing has always done that part of the thing so well, where the joy is in the unpredictability nestled into a schedule. And Animal Crossing Pocket Camp has no interest in that at all. Everything is so routine and so on tracks right. and so clear, and I'm progressing at a constant rate instead of at a sort of surprising rate. Like, if I want something if I want something that isn't just fashion for my camp, I know how to get it. and it's like min-max and focus on these specific Animal Crossing friends so that their hearts go up so that eventually they unlock the next tier of whatever their gift is, right? Or like, oh, I'm going to just keep making stuff so that I can invite more people over so I can get more hearts, which will unlock the next tier of furniture for me to build. Right. And it just
doesn't feel like you're getting rewarded, really.
Right, because the rewards are just, they're the same for everybody instead of having that little touch of like, I got a deal. Like, the best thing about Animal Crossing to me is the best thing about a yard sale. It's always been like, oh, you won't believe what I found today. And this just doesn't have that. Instead, it has, I'm still enjoying it, right? Like, I'm still trying my best to build out my little, like, campsite music venue. That's still, like, what my goal is to make a dope, like, outdoor music venue. But that's definitely the part of the joy that that's the main thing that I feel like has been brought over from Happy Home Designer and from like traditional Animal Crossing is here's how I'm going to express myself given these like mundane Legos to build a little space with. But I just wish it had a bit more of that unpredictability that traditional Animal Crossing did, because that's what I'm here for.
Yeah, my campsite is completely empty right now because another thing that I'm not super into is like you fill up your campsite with stuff to bring in campers from all over. And then if you
First of all, can we dig into that real quick? Can we talk about what that actually looks like? I know this take is like cold by now, but maybe people listening and Rob and Patrick, you don't know this structure yet. And it's absurd. One of the goals of the game is to bring friends over. Like, you're going to go out into the world. You're all campers. You're all out in this kind of nature reserve. And there's a core campground that you're in charge of. And you want to bring people to your campground. But all of them are like, all right, you're going to have to do a couple things for me first. And one of them is just, like, get them to like you a certain number of hearts by doing favors for them, like giving them fish or fruit or whatever. But then once you've done that, you can go over to them and be like, oh, hey, do you want to come to my campsite? And what they'll say is like, well, what sort of cabinets do you have? And it's ridiculous.
Yeah,
every fucking animal refuses to come over unless you have like, oh, well, you need to have this sort of bed. And then when to get them over, you have to hit a button that's like, oh, rearrange my entire campsite so that I can put down the ranch bed and the green dresser and the mini cactus so that fucking, I don't know, Rocket the horseman or whatever is going to come over for 2 minutes. And then you get a cutscene of him like laying down in your bed and swinging on your swing and looking at your cactus.
So basically you're like opening a gated subdivision. And you have to, like, convince each individual client to, like, buy into one of your, like, model homes.
But no, because they don't even stay like that. Once they finish the cutscene, there's a button. It's like, do you want to put all your shit back to where it used to be?
Wait, what?
And you hit yes. And then they just stay anyway.
I haven't been doing that. I've been self-arranging everything. So at one point, I had 10 campers, and I just had my campsite filled with shit. But what sucks about having the campers at your campsite is you can literally only fulfill one request while they're at your campsite. You can talk to them.
Right.
You can fulfill one request and you can ask them what's the latest and you'll fill up the heart like two notches. But by the time that they're at the campsite, it takes like five for a heart to get full. Also, yep. You can't talk to animals at other campsites, which kind of sucks. And I've lost the desire to visit my friends' campsites at this point and give kudos because it's just like I'm just gonna do these errands and then log off. But
also,
I'm
on the path to. I'm trying to build. So you get to choose like a genre for your campsite, basically. There's like natural and all of that stuff is like nice and like it looks like a campsite might look like, or there's like a tire swing or like a tree with a swing attached to it. There's one that's cute where it looks like there's almost like an amusement park, not an amusement park, but like a tent, like a circus tent or something. It's kind of cute. There's one that's just like a big picnic tent. I'm going down the quote unquote cool research tree, and the first one is just a Guy Fieri tent and a motorcycle and a fucking barrel fire. So I just have a loose barrel fire in my camp. The second, the top one, the reason I'm doing it is because the top one fits my main theme, which is it's a big like. It's like a stage. It's like a stage where you can build it's like a rock and roll stage. It's like, oh, it's a venue. And like, that's my whole dream. I'm trying to have a place where people can listen to music outside. The middle one is just a chunk of street and like a busker. It's like an open, and it's like a red telephone booth and like an open guitar case, like, give me money. And then random animals can just wander over to this fake Hollywood street set, pick up a guitar and play the same four chords over and over again. And it's like, I'm in the middle of the woods. No one is fooled by this ridiculous mini street set. Ugh.
But I also feel like no one can.
I'm heated.
Does what you choose, like, I chose natural, but like that doesn't even matter because the stuff that you're crafting can be like natural or it can be lovely or cute or sporty or whatever, and it doesn't matter because especially if you auto arrange, all your shit goes away anyway.
I think it only matters with when someone comes over and is like, when there are animals there and you debut a new, not attraction,
amenity.
Yeah. If it's the genre that they like, if it's the, like the subtype that they like, they'll get extra hearts or whatever from Also, sell me some fucking pants.
No one has sold me pants yet. They keep saying clothes crafting is coming. So I'm hoping that's sooner rather than later because I know everybody just wants new clothes.
I just want new clothes. Right now, my clothing game is bad.
Oh, I look like shit. I
look so bad. I don't have any pants. They finally sold me glasses today, but they're brown glasses.
I have the brown ones, too.
They're not good.
Nope.
Ugh. All right. But I like this. I like it's charming in spite of all of these very serious issues. There are other games in the genre. There are other games on a phone that I would rather be playing, I think. But
it's Animal Crossing.
It's Animal Crossing, yeah. And that is why I'm still playing it. Like, I like these character designs. I like the music a lot. And that's starting to sound maybe a little bit like the thing where I'm a hostage. And you see, I have no words because I'm so fucking frustrated over this. Stockholm Syndrome. Thank you.
Tom Nook Syndrome.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That motherfucker. You can spend real money to get to add him to your your camp.
No thanks.
And here's the fucked thing is, as long as you don't do it, there will be a notification on your screen being like, oh, there's a special right now in the market. If you spend 250 tokens or whatever tickets, you can get a chair for Tom Nook to come hang out at your camp. And if you don't buy it, it will always say that there's a special in the store for you. So even if you don't invite him over with real money, he's just going to be there and taunting you. I'm heated. I'm sorry. I'm very upset at Tom Nook. I'm very upset at my Animal Crossing. Mm-hmm. I'm holding out hope for a real Animal Crossing. There's got.
Oh, they'll do it. But it's probably just down the line. I'd imagine like they're going to give that at least 18 months to itself.
Yes.
Well, Animal Crossing is one of those ace cards.
When it's time to pump the gas on the Switch. You need that when you need to sell that new Switch. You put it out with like not just unique Joy Cons, but the whole thing has like a dope Animal Crossing theme on it.
Yes, I'll buy a new Switch for that.
See, we should hit a couple questions. I feel like we've been not hitting the question bucket as often as we used to do.
You guys
do,
just
so
did an episode.
Well, we
where
did a whole.
You
oh, sorry, Austin, that you weren't on the question bucket mailbag spectacular.
Okay,
we had a bunch of questions.
I had the thing.
You haven't been there.
I haven't answered questions. This one is nice. It's from Trolls from Copenhagen. If you have questions, you can send them to gamingadvice.com.
Trolls? Like Trolls?
Troels? I don't know how to pronounce this name. I'm sorry, Troels from Copenhagen. Trolls?
My kid's favorite movie is invading all parts of my life.
Wait, is your kid's favorite movie Trolls?
Oh, loves the movie Trolls.
Is it the Justin? Is it that
yeah.
song? Is that why?
I mean, that song, she's got that feeling. She danced, you want to calm her down, you put that song on, and her booty starts shaking, so...
Da, 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 da. Okay, sorry, it's in my head now. I don't even know how I know that song. I saw him perform it at Eurovision, that's why. Trolls from Copenhagen says, Highway Point Radio, a non-gaming related question, if that's okay. After following Rob Zachney from Three Moves Ahead over the last few months, I've been burning through the Waypoint back catalog. You are now officially voice famous in my book, and as an accent lover, I'd love to know where each of your accents stem from, if you're willing to share that, of course. Tell me about your accents.
Rob, since this started off with you.
I'm from Northwest Indiana, and so it's like a suburb of Chicago, but I do not have like a pronounced Chicago accent the way some other members of this podcast might. And then I sort of came of age living for 7 years in Wisconsin, so I have a very neutral Yankee accent, I suppose.
A neutral Yankee accent. Is that a thing? Is that...
It's called normal.
Oh, you talk normal. I see.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat as Rob. I grew up in the Chicago suburbs and spent time in Wisconsin, so a very hearty Midwest accent.
Danica? I guess you could say I'm like, I'm from Northern California, so I say hella a lot. Some people say that I sound...
Oh, a Life is Strange accent. Yes. I gotcha.
Some people kind of say that I kind of sound like a Valley Girl, which is more Southern California, but... I've spent a lot of time in Northern and Southern, so maybe that's true.
Right.
But, you know, just Northern California white girl is what I sound like.
My accent's a fucking mess because I'm from all over and I've spent time in a bunch of places and have, like, various affectations that I keep. Like, I say y'all because I like saying y'all, but also because I think it's a good gender-neutral, like, group, like, pronoun instead of guys or whatever, like catch all.
See, I'm from Chicago area. I can't stop myself from doing that from time to time. Like,
no, that's totally fine.
I use y'all a lot, but
right. Yeah. But well, like the thing is, like where I was born, they say use instead of saying y'all.
Oh, why did you not? Oh, come on, you should have kept that.
I can't. Well, because I wasn't really from there. That's the thing. Is like I'm from. So I was born in Wilkes-Barre, but the people at Wilkes-Barre call it Wilkes-Barre, and I refuse to call it Wilkes-Barre.
Why?
Because it's bad. Don't call it Wilkes-Barre.
It sounds great.
It's bad. Because it's not. Here's the thing. Is I'm from fucking Wilkes-Barre. I've been to Wilkes-Barre. You're not a Wilkes-Barre. That place is not friendly enough to be a Wilkes-Barre. It's like an old Rust Belt town. It's like an old coal mining town in northeastern Pennsylvania. It's like the smaller sister city to Scranton. You don't get to be Wilkes-Barre. So I'm from there, but I was raised in South Jersey. But I don't have there are a lot of South Jersey accent things that I don't have. Like, I don't say water. A lot of people in South Jersey say water instead of saying water. I don't say coupon. I say coupon. A lot of these were me trying to get over some bad accent things that people made fun of me for in college, like you do. There's still some I can't get over. Like, I can say Las Vegas correctly, but I can't say bagel correctly. My bagel just has, like, it's B-E-G-L-E. It's like, that's not how you say bagel. See, I can do it. I can say bagel. I can do it. But when I say I'm hungry, get me a cinnamon raisin bagel, like, it's just B-E-G-G-L-E. And I love it.
One of my favorite things about my wife is that she spent a lot of time in Minnesota and Illinois, and, like, for the most part, the Minnesota, like, accent has, like, disappeared. Like, it's mostly just a sort of, like, a standard Midwestern accent. But then when she's had, like, a little bit to drink,
right,
and she says the word house, it becomes house, and it just doesn't know. She doesn't know it. Like, it's not. It's clearly, like, not. It's
she
just
added
like
the syllable. There's a second syllable in there now.
Yeah, it's just because. So she's like, oh yeah, we should go check out the house. And I'm like, the what? It's like, we gotta check out the house. Like, the what? And she's like, oh, did I do it again? I was like, yeah, you did it again, which is fine. It's very cute. It's just extremely funny that it's just like a couple of words just like bubble up somehow.
It's so good. God. Then the other thing for me that's weird is definitely. Like code switching, right? Which is I grew up in black communities and had to learn how to move in white communities. I'm biracial. I have a black side of my family and a white side of the family, and like very much spoke differently in those sides of the family. And with my black friends and my white friends spoke differently, and have gotten to a point now where you can hear me do it like 100% depending on who I'm in a conversation. Like, if you listen to the Manveer conversation, like, I am extremely talking with my childhood friends, Austin, right there. And
I had never been around you in a scenario like that until the Waypoint 72.
Right, yeah, the 72 hour shift.
And I immediately was like, huh?
Yeah.
Like, and I'm like, I get it. Like, I totally understand. It was just the first time I had seen it happen in real time.
It's well, and it feels good. Like, it's so good. It's like legitimately. And I think we all do this to some degree around different people. Like, I think that, like, when you extrapolate from code switching to think about how you – I mean, like, this is the Ta-Nehisi Coates thing that he just talked about this in relation to white people and rap lyrics that they shouldn't fucking say was, like, you don't call – or, like, he doesn't call his father by what his father's parents call him. You know what I mean? Like, my stepdad calls my mom Mare, short for Mary Lisa, And I don't call her that. I call her mom, or I even call her ma, right? But like, you can extrapolate from there to a whole other situation of things where it's like with some friends groups, you just like, you are just present in a completely different way than in other friends groups all the time, even inside of similar demographic groups, right? Like, mm-hmm. the me in a classroom is not the me at a bar, even with the same group of friends. And it can be really nice to explore that space once you get through the like stress and horror of it being about survival instead of being about expression. And it's like, it definitely took me until I was like 22 or something before I had it all worked out. I'm probably older than that before I had it worked out to like, oh, both of these are me. I'm not lying as either of these people. They're the same person. They're just like filtered a little bit differently, and both of them are fun to be. So it is, that's always been a fun thing for me. One more here. This one's from Daniel, who says, hey, big fan of the podcast. I think you're all great. So I've been going through your entire podcast recently, sequentially, trying to glean how much things have changed over the past year. And I recently got hung up on two things, your early discussions about Final Fantasy 15 and the Nier Bonus podcast. I feel like both of these games have very intense emotional draws, but in vastly different ways. With Nier, the entirety of that game drew me in from the first moment, and by the time I did everything in it, I was an emotional wreck. I felt so alone yet connected, and it had such a strong message. With Final Fantasy XV, however, it wasn't until the end that I started to piece together the story properly, and that very last scene, you know the one, had me tear up unexpectedly. My question is, looking back at games over the years, how much of an emotional impact have video games had on your life? Or rather, how often have they made you really think about your own decisions, your life, your happiness, and brought you a genuine emotional response? Also, I'd love your thoughts on Final Fantasy XV now that they've added so much content to it. Boy, have I not had time to get back to Final Fantasy XV, unfortunately.
I'll probably check that out again when they put out the PC version.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That'd be like a good time to loop back around to. But yeah, I'm like you. As someone that liked a lot of what they were doing in that game, I have not. Yeah, they're adding like a multiplayer mode.
I think that's out. I think that multiplayer mode has dropped. I've seen people.
Good on them. People talk about games as a service, and it's interesting to see that applied to a single player game so robustly in a way that was really neat. So anyway.
What stands out in your lives is games that have like affected you emotionally, or that you have had like deep emotional moments with, or that have made you think about stuff in a bigger way. I know this is not actually that easy of a question. I think once you are on, I don't know, for me, like once I started being a critic, there it was definitely harder for me to be like, oh, this game is my favorite, and it made me cry a bunch because I wanted to hold my criticism to a higher standard than just it's good because it made me cry. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that games don't also still have this capability to move us. So what stands out for people?
Not long after, I think it was the same year that my father passed, which was about 5 years ago, I played the game Papo Yo, which is a game about. I should make it clear, my dad was not an alcoholic, abused father. He was a wonderful dad, but it was a game specifically about like a child dealing with like the loss of a father, and like the game does like some really interesting things with like the physical act of like letting go and like trying to turn that into like sort of an interactive thing, and. It hit me really hard to play a game that drew on a very specific experience, which is like a son losing their father. And although the context of like that loss was presented very differently in the game, and you know, vis-a-vis what actually happened to me, which my dad just died randomly of a shitty heart attack. That was like a moment, like it's the only time, like I've had games like tear up, like when you know the last scene of The Walking Dead's first season like was like really emotional and like kind of made me tear up, but uh-huh. like the actual sort of like full on a game just like crushing you and like causing me to like sort of like lose control of my emotions, like that's the only time a game has managed to do that, and it's always been hard for me to judge like, was that game actually any good at doing that thing, or was it just that like I was in a particular moment at a particular time and place, and by the game even opening the door to
right.
that, it was able to, like, it's the same way that like these I have trouble judging any like piece of media that like deals with any similar subject, because I just like can't rationally, I can't look at it rationally, mm-hmm. because all someone needs to do is like raise the topic and like I just turn into a, right. like, a complete mess.
Yeah.
But that was the one time that a game really got to me. Lots of games that made me feel sad, lots of games that made me tear up, but that's like the one time a game really like crushed me.
Right. I think I'm consuming media in a very similar way, because this is public knowledge, but my dad is dying like soon, you know, and even like my best friend got me a Switch so I could play through Mario Odyssey with him, because he got me my first Nintendo console, and we played through
right.
Mario, and we played through Link to the Past together, and I haven't even been able to buy Breath of the Wild yet, because I'm like, I'm just not ready. But I played through some of Odyssey with my dad, and he like really enjoyed it, and so I'm gonna continue playing Odyssey with my dad every time I go back to see him, but I know it's gonna completely fuck me up. So
yeah. Yeah, family feelings are yeah. a lot as you get older, it turns out.
Right,
yeah.
And that's and so that's like yeah. that's like I think a mix of, I've always had this like very special connection to Mario and Zelda games because my parents like really opened the door into me consuming other types of media that weren't, I guess, the norm. And that started with Mario and Zelda, so they've always held like a very special place in my heart, you know, and I think Ocarina of Time was probably the last Zelda game where I got very, very emotional. But they have like this new meaning behind them now.
Yeah. The one that got me recently was definitely Nier, and not even, it's just, I think it's just been a sad year. And so I've been very thin membraned on in terms of like what gets to me, but that's not fair. I don't want to take away from Nier. Good. The thing that was wild to me was like the moment that got me was literally just, there's a moment towards the, there are lots of moments in this game where you fight robots. There's a moment towards the end of the game where you're fighting a robot, and you're fighting a lot of like robots inside of various towers and stuff. And it's like, it's a busy work mission. It is not a main mission. It isn't like a story thing happens and then I started like sobbing. It was just fighting these fucking robots in the context of what I knew about the characters and where they were at. And I think at the time, it was just this, like, deep awareness of these deeply flawed characters. These characters who were just falling all over themselves to try to get at something that they could never get to. Various, depending on what, all the characters had different things that they were looking for by the end of that game. And just like so distraught over the futility of what they were all working towards, that just in the middle of this bullshit side quest, or it was a main quest, but it wasn't like an important story moment, I just started crying. And it was just like, there we are. There are people right there. Because like the core message of Nier so much is, why do we prize what we think it means to be human? Is it such a good thing? And also, like, if it does the are robots like people thing, it also does the reverse, which is like, are you just a fucking robot? Like, are we all just pretending to be what we think people are? And it just like totally hit me out of nowhere and knocked me the fuck out. That said, like, I think more, I would like more games to have that effect on me. There's lots that I can find in other forms of media, from music to television to film to books to you know, various other sorts of art that, like, move me in a deeply emotional way or in a very thoughtful way, or that make me angry or that make me content. And there isn't enough in those spaces in games right now for me. Like, I guess when I think about my tops of the year, like, it's the moments spent in like Tarrytown in Zelda this year, a similar sort of warm contentedness in that place. And I want more that explore those experiences instead of just the sort of like hyper victorious ones, which I also like, to be clear. Like, winning that chicken dinner with Patrick on stream was like an incredible emotional high. And I don't want to discount that as being emotional just because it was like, screaming yeah, and singing 100%. A song about chicken nuggets, but like I want just more variety in there. Rob, anything come to mind for you?
I mean, yeah, like, not that many games have that huge an impact on me on that level. I think because so many of the games that I've played that sort of try to operate on that level, I've played since I started doing this professionally, right?
Right.
And like you said, Austin, like, it just, it changes your reaction. I think, you know, the opening of The Last of Us is nakedly manipulative, but it is successfully manipulative. Uh-huh. That moment lands. I think one of the more effective rug being yanked out from under your moments, yanked out from under you moments I've had in the last few years is Banner Saga 1, where two of the main characters are this father and daughter, Rook and Alette, and he's sort of an old huntsman in this rural community. His daughter Alette is sort of following in his footsteps. And you're leading this growing band of survivors across this apocalyptic wasteland. It's a really gorgeous game. It's a really good game. Highly recommended to everyone. But a lot of the game is also about the changing relationship between Rook and his daughter. That she is starting to come into herself as a woman, as a hunter. She is now competent and able to take the lead on things, where before she used to, you know, wait for her dad to decide, right? And a big part of the dynamics of that game are, you know, you have these moments of, do you let go? Do you say, like, I trust your agency, I trust your judgment, I'm going to let you do what, you know, you feel needs to be done? Or do you try to, like, you know, pull back, right? Do you have trouble letting go as a parent?
Right.
And it definitely feels to me, like, through a lot of that game, that a big part of this journey is about, you know, the act of letting go as a parent and trusting a kid's relationship. And do we want to spoil this right now?
No, we should not do that. Okay. But if you want it to be spoiled, Riley McLeod over at Kotaku literally just wrote this piece.
Okay.
Did you see it? I accidentally got
Wait, like today?
Friday. Literally Friday.
Oh, shit.
I accidentally got the worst ending in The Witcher 3. It's super good. It's filled with those spoilers and goes deep into a lot of the stuff around it. I'd rather not...
In Banner Saga? Banner Saga?
Oh, you're saying Banner Saga. I thought you were talking about Witcher 3, which also is about... Is it also about parenthood and bad
Did
choices?
Did I say Witcher?
I made this leap in my own head because you were talking about a fantasy series in which it's about parenting. That's me.
Yeah. Okay, but... Okay,
now I'm curious because I don't know what happens with Banner Saga, but I feel like we shouldn't spoil it. We shouldn't spoil it.
Okay.
Give me the vague emotional beats. Is it just...
It's just there is a major choice where Alette is really pushing to do something at the end of the game. And the question is whether or not you should let her. And who is the person you can trust the most to sort of carry the ring to Mordor, as it were. And it feels like there's a right decision and that there's a... that, like, this is an important relationship building block and all this, and maybe it is, but also that decision actually unfolds in some really unexpected ways.
Is there a right decision? Or because I know, like, one of the things that's interesting throughout that game is,
neither decision is entirely comfortable or happy, and both have sort of, both decisions reverberate into the next game.
Right.
But the entire game is about building this relationship, and at the end, it comes to a surprising end that feels like, it feels very realistic, right? That life doesn't unfold in a series of, like, learning moments where you do, you know, you do the right thing and then things work out. That's not how the Banner Saga works out. And it's very realistic, but it's also very kind of shocking. In particular, because, like, it's a tactics game with a lot of talking head cutscenes. They're beautiful.
They're beautiful, yeah.
And
but, like,
it is kind of a melancholic game, but holy shit, the ending.
But that's one of the things that's nice. I'm happy to hear that, because that art style does carry with it such a degree of melancholy. Like you said, a sort of, like, a pastoral passing. Do you know what I mean? Like, that game very much has all, just from the you know, handful of hours I put into the first one, always to me felt like, the days when things were simple and good are behind us. And there's lots of people looking off into the middle distance with, like, their hair blowing in the wind, and it's all beautifully animated. And I'm glad that isn't just a posture.
I think just the thing I'll say is I think the things that have resonated with me the most is I think something a lot of games do well is loss. When I think of like games that have resonated with me, The Witcher 2 is kind of like by the end of that game, everything is a smoking ruin. Like everything you've tried to do has basically imploded, and it sets up The Witcher 3. But you sort of spend much of that game watching the world you've known for the previous two Witcher games kind of be like put to the torch, right? You know, it's a silly overwrought game, but Max Payne 2 really hit for me. And a big part of that is every character who survived the first game, every character you formed a bond with in that first game, that relationship is changed or torn up, and you sort of watch it happen and participate in it happening. I think something about the medium lends itself to that in particular, I think.
To this notion of losing things and people.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder why that is. I wonder if that's something intrinsic to games or reflective of a history of games that have honed our skills at telling stories about loss, and have provided the right tool set for that versus the tool set. Like, I think that I don't know the answer to this. Like, I think that there are lots of fun theses that we could toss out around games, single player games being very solitary experiences versus being, you know, collaborative one. Like, there's all sorts of stuff we could go with there. I'd love to hear what people think about that. Maybe over at discourse.zone on our forums. It's a good question. So go do that. And the other thing you can do is you could go to waypoint.zone/BOEN to hear Bowen, who lets us use his track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. I'm Austin Walker. You can find me on Twitter at Austin_Walker.
You're doing the outro.
Yeah, I've nice. Snuck us over to the outro very quietly.
Peace.
I'm Danica Harrod. You can follow me on Twitter at Danica Harrod and also at Waypoint.
Thank you, Danica, for being the good Twitter person. Patrick, where can people find you?
Find me at EvoVac Support.
At EvoVac Support.
Uh-huh. Getting that support. For those robots, like support, like emotional support for the robots. Like I'm a team robot.
And shout outs to Danielle, who could not be here today because she's doing some doctor stuff. I think everything's fine. I think it's wrist junk. I think she's good. But shout outs to Danielle. I think that's it. I think that's all we got.
Rob didn't say where we could follow him.
Yeah, but that's because he already said goodbye. He already said peace.
Oh. Yeah, he's gone.
He's gone.
You can't
he
come back
up.
Once you've said peace.
Once you said peace, that's the law. You can't
come
back.
You can follow Rob Zachney on Twitter.com. Twitter.com/RobZachney.
/ scuba fan. Scuba with two O's.
The scuba
times,
man.
If I'm being really honest.
I knew you kicked it. All right, everybody. I think that's going to do it for today. We'll be back with more streams and podcasts all throughout the week. And we'll confirm on that Waypoint 101 soon once I get to talk to everybody and look at a schedule and figure out what is actually feasible around this thing. All right, that's going to do it. I'm going to say it, even though she's not here. Be good and be good at it.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.